Well, I want to begin by thanking you for changing your clocks last night. You know, that's something that we could easily forget, but you obviously did, and you're here. And I've had my extra cup of coffee this morning because I needed it. I really did. And so I'm ready to preach as well. If you are continuing in our weekly Bible reading, the schedule that is still out there, if you need one, it's still out, and you have time to catch up. If you are far behind, you can still catch up on your daily Bible reading. It's the New Testament with the Psalms and the Proverbs. And if you were with us last Sunday morning in our first sermon, we looked at one of the Psalms that we had last week, the 25th Psalm from King David. And so this morning I thought, well, we ought to look at a section of Scripture that we read and we appreciate, but very seldom do we ever talk about this section of Scripture in the book of Proverbs. I did it with one of the lessons earlier, sounding like this, because as you read that section of Scripture, it's like, how are we going to get a sermon out of it? And that's kind of the way I look at that section of Scripture. How can I present a sermon out of these 11 verses? Because the things that are there just seem and feel so obvious. And yet there's things in there that I want to discuss for a few moments, because very soon we're going to get into the 10th chapter of Proverbs. Once you get into the 10th chapter of Proverbs, it's just like one hit after another. It's just one short or pithy truth after another. And so when you deal with five Proverbs, you basically have 5 points in a lesson once you get to chapter 10. But here we kind of have a narrative that's still in play as we look at what Solomon is trying to teach us. And so for Thursday's reading, we looked at Proverbs chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. And what I've tried to do this morning is to break this section up into four sections and talk about some things that are quite obvious, but yet I think are pretty instructive for us and shouldn't be overlooked. Let's begin by looking at the first section of Scripture that I used as the title of the lesson, Does Not Wisdom Cry Out? And understanding lift up her voice. She takes her stand on the top of the high hill beside the way where the paths meet. She cries out by the gates, at the entry of the city, at the entrance of the doors. Well, you know, God has a way of using very vivid illustrations to often get his points across. And he's doing the same thing here. Let me introduce to you, by some artist's interpretation, Miss Wisdom. That's the idea that's portrayed there on the screen before you. And Miss Wisdom, she stands in a 180 diametrical contrast to the last woman that Solomon had talked about in chapter 7. And so I think these two are juxtapositioned against one another. When you look at the end of chapter 7 and you go into chapter 8, at the end of chapter 7 we find the immoral, the sinful woman, the harlot of the town. As chapter 7 and verse 26 talks about her, that she has produced many wounds without cause. And her pathway is the way to hell. What a very graphic description there in verse 26 and 27. But Miss Wisdom, that's not what she does. Miss Wisdom, she wants you to walk upward. She wants you to gain and go forward in a positive and appropriate direction. And she promises that there's great everlasting gifts that are there. There, Miss Wisdom, she stands at the top of the high hill. She stands beside the way. She stands where the paths meet. She stands at the gates of the city. She stands at the entrance of the doors. In everywhere, Miss Wisdom can be found. That if you are looking for Miss Wisdom, you can find Miss Wisdom. And I really like the expression there, where she is at the top of the high hill. I think about the wisdom of God seems to always be presented in that top or superior position. I go back to the book of Exodus. Remember, where did God's wisdom meet man? At the top of Mount Sinai, or at the top of Mount Horeb. Remember, Moses had to go high up on the mountain. And there was God. And God was presenting His law, His testimonies, His precept. And Moses would bring them down. Remember, he comes down the mountain and tells Israel, you're not worthy of these commandments, basically, and throws the tablets, and 3,000 end up dying because they weren't worthy of God's wisdom. Or you might think about Jesus. the greatest sermon ever? That's the way I look at Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. Well, it's that known as the Sermon on the Mount. That's what we call it, right? Now, that could just be for illustrative purposes. But Jesus there on the Mount teaching everybody, sitting below, listening to the great wisdom coming from His lips from Matthew's account in chapters 5, 6, and 7. And then I think about John. Remember where the angels carried him to the top of the high mountain and revealed unto him the new Jerusalem, that great and perfect tabernacle that is above everything there is. So God's wisdom is at the top of the mountains. And then you think about at the gates. Well, usually at the gates of the city, who was there? You would have the aged men, the wise men. If it was a sacred or a holy city, you would find maybe prophets or preachers or Levites that would be there at the gates of the cities. And you could gain the wisdom of God from those individuals that would be there. Now, the old school, going back into the southern roots like Tompkinsville, Sandra, you would find the old men whittling there at the courthouse steps. But that's where you would go to hear the stories. You would go to hear the old wisdom, the old advice. Here is Miss Wisdom, that you can find her there. Or you think about the paths. What was it that Yogi Berra said? When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Well, that's kind of where wisdom is. She's sitting at the fork of the road. Now, if you stop and think about that, that makes a lot of sense. That back in the day, they didn't have roads like us. You know, they weren't speeding away in their automobiles. They would be walking up paths, basically. Or they'd be on their camels or whatever they would be sitting on. Their little chariots are being drawn by a horse or whatever the case may be. And so a crossroad would be a really good place to set up shop. If I was a hot dog vendor, I'd want to be right there on that corner, right, where both of the roads come together. And that's where you would have the sayers, you would have the wise people. That's where people would gather and meet. Wisdom would be at the fork of the road. Wisdom would be at the entrance to the temple. And so God is trying to tell us that wisdom is available. Wisdom is there for everyone to hear what Miss Wisdom has to say. And so when you stop and think about that, those first three verses, you wonder what can be taught from them. God's trying to wake us up and saying wisdom is crying out. Does not wisdom cry out? Of course wisdom is crying out everywhere and in every place. Well, let's just go a little bit further and consider what is said in verses 4 down through verse 6. To you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O you simple ones, understand prudence. And you fools, be of an understanding heart. Listen, for I speak of excellent things, and from the opening of my lips will come right things. Well, first of all, let's talk about the subjects and whom Miss Wisdom is trying to talk to. The context is that she's trying to talk to the sons of youth. The young men, and she describes them as the simple, the ones that are even fools. And that's why I have it highlighted there, you sons of men, you simple ones, you fools. The simple, by definition, according to Wilson's Old Testament dictionary, are those who are devoid of understanding. They're the ones who are easily enticed and seduced. They're the inexperienced. They're the naive or the innocent ones. The ones that you could easily fool. The ones that you could easily beguile. And when you stop and think about that expression, it is contrasted to the last woman that we talked about. And so he's talking to the simple men, talking to the fools, talking to the sons of men. And notice there it says at the beginning of verse 6, it just used the word, listen. Parents, we've used that on our kids before, haven't we? Kids running and rampant and something like that, and we get their attention by saying, listen. That's been an old technique that has been used for generations. I tell you, preachers have used that for a long time. School teachers have used that technique for a long time. The Apostle Paul used that technique. And when the Apostle Paul uses a technique like that, we ought to listen. That's what the writer... Look there in Acts chapter 13 and in verse 16. Acts 13, verse 16. Paul stood up. He motioned with his hand and said, men of Israel and you who fear God, listen. Then he started preaching. It's a good thing for us to listen. When E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. Now, those of you that are older, you remember that commercial. Those of you that are younger, you're saying, what? You can go on YouTube and check it out. But that was a very famous commercial that was used by E.F. Hutton Bank for at least a decade, maybe longer. They used that for a long time. That people would just turn their ears. Listen is what the writer is saying. Now, what is Miss Wisdom trying to tell them? Miss Wisdom is trying to tell them that you need to understand prudence. You need to have an understanding heart. And that you need to recognize that what I'm telling you are excellent things. They're right things. Understand prudence. Now, if you're using a King James, it'll just say understand wisdom. But that word wisdom is, I think, correctly handled by the New King James translation as the word prudence. That word wisdom in that particular setting is defined as craftiness and subtlety. It is a caution as to the danger of risk that you are in, to govern yourself with discipline. You need to understand and be cautious about the things that are around you. There's craftiness all around you. There's subtleness that may entrap you. Understand prudence. I think it was the most famous lines that ever came from George H.W. Bush. I remember he constantly was saying, wouldn't be prudent. Need to have prudence. No, it's not a Beatles song. It is the idea of having caution. And young men need that, right? I mean, the young ones, the simple ones, the foolish ones, the ones that are devoid of understanding and inexperienced. Caution. You need to understand being cautious. Kids just have a tendency of just daring off the wind. If you happen to watch any of the things on YouTube that some of the young kids do, you're kind of like blindfolded. I can't believe he's going to try to do that with a bike or try to do that with a skateboard. You've got to be kidding. But young kids, they just throw caution to the wind. And so wisdom is trying to say you need to be more cautious. And you need to not only understand wisdom, you need to have an understanding heart. You need to understand at the seat of the intellect is the way that this is described. May I just kind of cut to the chase? You need to kind of wrap your mind around what I'm saying. That's what Miss Wisdom's saying. Wrap your mind around what I'm trying to tell you. That sounds like a parent too, doesn't it? You know, when I talk about Miss Wisdom, maybe it's Mrs. Wisdom. You know, a way a mom would speak to her son that is devoid of understanding and inexperience. That they need to wrap their minds around the truth. She's speaking excellent things. She's speaking things that are right. These are the things that cause one to know what truth is and allows one to spiritually excel. That's when you talk about excellent things, the things that cause you to excel or propel in a proper and good direction in life. That's the type of things that she's speaking. Well, this is the way God's been speaking to us all through the Scriptures. He's just using another avenue, Miss or Mrs. Wisdom, to convey these points to a son of man, to a young one, a foolish one, that I give you the things that will cause you to excel. Kind of the way that the writer of this book, his father, would talk. It'd be King David. So how many times have we read these wonderful types of words in the Psalms? For example, the 19th Psalm, and in verses 7 and 8. The 19th Psalm, verse 7, "The law of the Lord is perfect, converting soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandments of the Lord are pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true, and they're righteous altogether." You want to excel? The Lord's commands give us that. His precepts, His testimonies, His word, His statutes, all of those things, they're right and they're excellent. David was telling Israel that. Solomon comes along and confirms that point in the great book where Mrs. Wisdom is talking aloud to us in this visual. Another way it's said in the 22nd chapter of Proverbs, going once again back to Solomon. Now, we're getting towards the end of Solomon's writings here. In Proverbs 22 and verse 17, the wise say, "Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise and apply your heart to my knowledge. For it is a pleasant thing if you keep them within you. Let them all be fixed upon your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I have instructed you today, even you. Have I not written to you excellent things of counsels and knowledge, that I may make you know the certainty of the words of truth, that you may answer words of truth to those who sent to you? I've given you words of truth. I give you excellent words." That's what wisdom is crying out in this section. What should we do? Listen. Isn't that what she says there? Listen. For I speak of excellent things, and I speak from my lips comes right things. Well, Miss or Mrs. Wisdom continues to prod those that are simple, those who are devoid of understanding, the inexperienced, the foolish. For Miss Wisdom says in verse 7, "For my mouth will speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are with righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverse is in them. They are all plain to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge." What do we find here? Again, the contrast. The contrast from chapter 7 of the immoral woman versus chapter 8, which is Miss Wisdom. The immoral woman, what does she embode in her heart? Wickedness, crookedness, perversity. That's what she does. And Miss Wisdom says, "You're not going to find that coming out of my lips. You're not going to find wickedness or that which is crooked or that which is perverse." Wickedness. I found it interesting looking at Wilson's Old Testament dictionary of the definition of wickedness. And Wilson defines it this way: to confound all right and wrong, just and unjust, truth and falsehood, good and evil, as to think that there's no difference of persons, things, or actions. This is to throw the state of human affairs into great confusion. That's an interesting definition, a really good definition. In Isaiah chapter 5 and in verses 20 and 21, our society is just like that. "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight." Boy, we are living in a generation just like that, aren't we? We're living in a generation that is so confused. We live in a generation, and if you just do a little bit of insight, that people more and more are turning to the concept of being the good witch. I don't know if that got started with the Wizard of Oz or not. But you have the good witch. It's a good thing to be a witch or a warlock or of that particular movement, the pagan movement, the movement of God is earth. And so many in our generation think that the good way of life is to make sure that we live in a pro-choice society. That's really the good side, that the horrible Bible thumpers, the ones that are pro-life, we need to do something about those kind of people. But the pro-choice is the right movement. The prostitutes are out there all over the airwaves and all over the internet that are saying that we provide what you really, really like and what you really, really want in society. And so many of the devoid, the young men, just simply go in that direction. Remember what James had to say in James chapter 3. He talks about the sensual, evil, demonic world. James chapter 3 and verse 14. "If you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, don't boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom doesn't descend from above. It's earthly, it's sensual, it's demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist," notice there, "confusion and every evil thing are there." That's what's there. Wickedness, crooked, and perverse. When I think about that, when I think about that which is crooked, I think of the villain, the arch-villains. That's the immoral woman, the arch-villain. She's the crooked one. She's the perverse. Remember I talked about the perversity that alcohol does with people and brings them into that situation. I think about villains. I don't know why my mind goes immediately to the 1968 Batman series, but it does. It just goes there. And I think about Catwoman, that crooked, every time you see her on screen, her face is crooked. But she looks so tempting. She seems so right. She seems to make some sense to some people, a lot of people in our generation today. The word crooked there is the word forward, you might find. It means those who are deceitful or frauds. The immoral woman. Think about the way she was talking to that young man. Come and we will make of love throughout the night. There's nothing about love going on there. But that's what she encourages the young man to think. The perverse, by definition, a wandering, vagrant mind, going sometimes this way, sometimes that way, an uncertain spirit that will fall for certain. What's that old expression is that you have to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. I think that was a quote in a song. There's a lot of people that are like that, that they'll just fall for anything that comes fleeting by that seems so logical. And this is the type of people that false teachers have a heyday with in our generation. In 2 Peter chapter 2, when you think about the way in which false teachers operate and prey upon the young, devoid men and women of society, they use these tricks. In 2 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 12, they're like natural brute beasts made to be caught and destroyed. They speak evil of things they don't understand. They will utterly persist in their own corruption or perversities. They will receive the wages of unrighteousness as those who count it a pleasure to carouse in the daytime. Their spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions while they feast with you. They have eyes full of adultery. They cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls. They have a heart trained in covetous practices, and they are accursed children. Yep, that's who they are. And that's who they bring to their fold. Miss Wisdom, she never speaks that way. Miss Wisdom, what is she speaking? She's giving you the truth. She's going to talk to you about things that are right. She's going to give you the plain smackdown, so to speak. She's going to just lay the facts on the table for those who want to hear. This is what Mrs. Wisdom does. This is what a good mother does for her son. This is what Miss Wisdom, the wisdom of God, does for all of us. There's no wickedness to be found. There's no confusion. God clarifies all the confusion. He takes that which is confusing and makes it clear for us to understand. He lays spiritual facts before our eyes to consider and to submit ourselves to. And so there is the immoral woman that presents wickedness, crookedness, and perversity. And then there's Miss Wisdom that cries out for everything that is true and right and good. And there's one more. Receive my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things one may desire cannot be compared to her. Oh, the search for silver and gold. I know Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer comes into your mind. Silver and gold. That's the hunt that society's after. This is what men look for. I've got to have more and more silver and gold. But wisdom is trying to tell you that as wonderful in silver and gold and rubies may be for the progress and the success of your life here upon the earth, I have something that goes beyond silver and gold and rubies and precious stones. Something that will help you make great choices in life that money cannot do for you. Something that will help you make the best decisions for eternity, in which silver and gold and rubies will not profit you once you go to your grave. Wisdom. Wisdom for you and your family. Wisdom for you and your children. Wisdom for you and the directions and the decisions that you make in this life. Mrs. Wisdom is crying out. Silver and gold cry out. Rubies cry out. All the things of this life cry out. What will win the battle for your heart and your mind? That's what Solomon's trying to say to the young man. Miss Wisdom is trying to say, learn from me now, young people. Young people, learn these truths. Not only young people, but the young at heart, learn these truths, because a day is going to come when you keep making bad decisions, like going to the house of the immoral woman, you're going to pay for it with your life. You're going to pay for it in ways that you never thought possible. You go into the wrong direction, you choose the wrong woman here, and your destiny may be... Wisdom is crying out. That's what we do. We cry out all the time. We cry out for people to hear the wisdom of God. We cry out to people, learn the principles of God, learn the truth of God, learn the right things of God, learn the teachings of Jesus Christ. Let them permeate into your heart and help you make wise, proper decisions. And that's why we always offer invitations, because we just never know who might be in the audience that is considering the wrong woman, that's considering the wrong advice, that's making the wrong judgments. Maybe something can be said or done to encourage you to choose Miss Wisdom, the wisdom of God. There's someone in the audience that you know that you've been choosing the wrong woman, that you've been choosing confusion, perversity, that you've been choosing evil and wickedness, that maybe you've chosen that which is full of fraud and deceit, and you're tired of that lifestyle and you want to come to the wisdom of God, we give you that opportunity by this invitation. Why not start this day off correct? I know we've lost an hour. Don't lose your soul. That's too important. Give your heart to Jesus. You can do that by coming to the front while we stand and sing this song of encouragement.